And then the camera pans away from the car and you see it driving down one of these roads into the country out towards the college, wherever that is. And somebody's laughing so hard at the end of it and they go, "Oh, I ache with joy." To his credit, he thinks all of these objects aren't alive.
Yeah.
So he's just doing business and getting punished for it. What is so bad about this guy?
This whole movie could very easily, like if it came out in the actual 90s instead of the 80s, it would probably be this whole big like reuse, recycle message. They would have ham-fisted that in and this guy would have been the hero.
I feel like nothing is ham-fisted into this film. It is all just thrown on the floor and they're like, walk through it, guys. We all had to.
They're turning it into a piece of art.
Yeah.
But they're just throwing paint at it.
It just happens to be a Pollock.
Okay.
Okay, so the dog gets freaked out too and he drives away in the car, but only after
he buckles his seatbelt.
He buckles his seatbelt!
It's great.
Yeah. Everyone is good and buckled in this film if they are a person or a living creature in a car.
The customer like sticks his head into the back. So the guy like gets freaked out. He runs into a bar. He like hits himself and passes out. And that's when all of these appliances make their escape. And that's what scares the dog into the car. And then the customer comes out and says, "You got those radio tubes?"
Yeah, except it sounds like, okay, so the guy, they only show him twice.
Yeah.
He's like this big toothed, froey haired, skinny redneck guy. Uh-huh. But his voice sounds like the guy from Letterkenny.
Don't know if I know who that is.
Letterkenny. It's on Hulu. You should watch it.
Okay.
Yeah. If you like witty banter and Canadians.
Okay.
It's good.
Objects make it to the outskirts of the city by the end of day three.
Yes, they see the City of Light. It beckons them forward, and we get a little bit reprise of the song. Okay, so.
Day four.
So Rob, the master, is talking to his mom and is talking about how he's going to go get the stuff from the cabin. They haven't been there for years. Why the hell he's going to go now? I don't know. But he's like, "I'm going to go get my lamp and the toaster and the blanket." All of them specifically, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is he so attached to these? Did no one give him a toy as a child, right? But also the other appliance around the apartment hear him as he's leaving the door, and Lydia pointed out that she liked the mom for being such a mom. So he leaves the apartment, and then all of the modern appliances start to wake up and they're like, "He's gonna go get their stuff. Wow, I'm a perfectly good lamp. I'm a good entertainment system. Why isn't he taking us?" Right?
What college dorm room haver is going to want an entertainment system?
This thing is floor to ceiling and it looks heavy AF.
Yeah.
I'm over moving heavy furniture.
A radio is more practical than a heavy piece of entertainment equipment.
It's true. And it's a dorm room. You need a tiny lamp.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's what you need to know about this scene. So all of these appliances get really jealous, right?
Right.
The appliances we've been with, they got played with.
Yeah.
And that's why they love the master.
They got used.
Yeah. Lamp for reading, although he's dumb as f***. The toaster for the toast. Playing makeup faces. I guess he liked to vacuum or some I don't know how he bonded with the vacuum, but apparently he did. And then he snuggled with the blanket. And he danced around, I'm assuming, to the radio. And that was a great fun for everyone. This is a grown kid now. What is he doing to the appliances at his mother's house in the city? It's an apartment in the city. Is he like playing with a lamp?
Well, I think it's more the fact that he's having to use it. Like, we are in my apartment right now, and you see this lamp over there.
Right.
I rarely use that lamp.
It's a beautiful lamp.
It is a beautiful lamp. I got it from my grandma. But, like, I mean, if I were just to pick up and leave, and the appliances that I expect to come find me, my computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't expect that lamp to show up in the middle of nowhere.
So it's not sentimental value.
Right.
It's proximity and usage.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I'll accept that.
I mean, maybe I'm just making excuses for a movie that just left me going, what?
Yeah. So we cut the appliances are finding him in the city, and they open up an archaic book of knowledge. It's a phone book. They open up a phone book. It's archaic now.
This for anybody who doesn't know what a phone book is, it's like a phone book on your phone, only it's about as thick as a Bible.
Or thicker. And it's got all the people and their residences and places of business. It is a big phone book.
Yeah. So you could go ahead and look for someone.
And they'd be hanging out by payphones in the city, a place where you could pay coinage to make brief phone calls.
Yeah. And then they come up to an intersection and they look at the intersection light and be like, we're looking for, and I don't remember the address.
Oh, but it's actually 247 McBean Parkway.
Yeah. And then the street light
directs them.
Yeah.
But okay. Before we move on from this, because this is how they do get to the apartment, this, I presume they knew the kid's name was Rob, right? But this is a kid just heading off to college who's been living with his mother, right?
Right.
He's not going to be listed in the phone book. His mother is going to be listed in the phone book. You telling me that these master-obsessed nubbins were looking up mom?
Maybe.
I say that's bad.
There's always the possibility that they knew the mom's first name.
Possible, but I don't think it's
plausible. Yeah, there's no in movie context that goes ahead and says, hey, this is her name.
It doesn't really matter. They just need to get to the apartment.
Maybe there was some old paperwork that they brought. Like, you know how when you go to a cabin, let's say you go to the cabin for summer, and I suppose logistically, as a parent, like if you got some important papers that you're bringing in from like your apartment in the city, maybe there's something that goes ahead and, you know, maybe there was some piece of paperwork left over.
You know what? I think it's got to be true. It's unfair of me to assume that they live in some sort of bubble, but they're so obsessed with him and mention literally no other human being that isn't directly in their path.
Right.
I just don't think so.
Right.
But it doesn't really matter. We get to the apartment. Do they knock on the door?
They do. And then they just sort of like, they're in a baby carriage. And so they just sort of like,
and there's knock. No, we don't know if there's any kind of battery in there.
Yeah.
We've just Audi 500 that whole idea.
Yeah. So they knock on the door. Nobody shows up. And then Radio, back in his war days, goes ahead and does the secret knock that allows all of the appliances on the inside to know that there are other appliances outside. So he does this knock. And then the lamp from inside, the smug lamp, which I think they call them Plugsy.
Yeah, Plugsy's the worst name. Because Lampy apparently got it first, but Plugsy shows up and he's like this brutish guy.
He's a New Yorker. He's a stereotypical New Yorker.
Yeah, and he seems kind of like thuggish, you know? Like,
I'll bust some plugs.
And so at first he freaks out. He's like, they're here, right? Then they all decide to get nefarious and they're like, come on in, guys.
Yeah. And then there's a sewing machine with two faces talking about like the blanket.
I call them the conjoined twins.
They're talking about like how like all of these appliances are just so like, you know, dumb and stupid. And then the blanket comes over and they're like, hi.
Yes, they are literally two-faced.
Yeah.
And it's pink. It's a pink sewing machine.
It's pink.
And then they all pass them and they smile and they pass. And then as soon as they're done passing, they like, because they want to go see Andy's room and stuff. Not Andy. Sorry, Pixar Universe. They want to go see Rob's room. Oh, no, they're passing through the living room and the TV is from the cabin.
Right.
So this whole apartment's very modern. And we're about to go into a dance sequence about it. But like, they're like, what was his name?
TV. They just call him TV.
TV.
I think they just call him TV. I don't know. Like, this movie left me in a state. So I could be completely wrong.
I mean, they've got lots of nicknames all over the place. They call the toaster slot head and stuff. So I thought there was a nickname for the TV, but just TV is fine. They all hug.
Yeah.
And they go on their exploring.
And he's about to say that the master is going to be so happy that they're back because he actually left to go
and
to
then they, the... And then they switch him from behind. Yeah. They change his station somehow.
Plugsy switches.
To Spanish.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough Spanish to tell you what he says.
4 years of Spanish myself. I don't know what he says.
Please, applauders, if you find yourself watching this film and you speak Spanish, if you could post that translation to our Facebook page, that would be amazing.
Feel free. And then we get into another musical number called Cutting Edge.
Okay, so my notes say, the modern tech is nice, but reveal being assholes in song.
Yeah.
And at one point in the middle of the song, and I want you to discuss it, but like the lamp is transported around the room by another appliance. He is sitting on top of an electric hand mixer, and it's just scuttling around the house, and I don't understand what that's about, but go on and describe this.
So it's just a bunch of new appliances talking about how they're more better than the current, than our protagonist.
That's the reprise. It's more.
But here's the thing about technology. Technology is exponentially getting faster and better more and more. And like this entertainment system, that's going to be obsolete in like 3 years.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I turn and I look at Jen and I'm like, what is that right there? What is that? And I knew it was a computer, but it looked like this big black box that's very solid. Now we have monitors and towers, right? But this thing is like all inclusive because we all wanted it at the time, guys. We wanted it to be like an arcade machine that was at your house, but was actually a computer.
Right.
And it's like memory.
I would like to point out that when they do the projector, that they actually took the time to use red, green, blue as the combination in order to project it, which would have been in accordance with the old CRT projectors of the day.
You nerd. I like it. I like it, though. Mm-hmm. I like that kind of thing.
But they're also sponsored by TDK, and they were an electronics company.
Yes, you can actually see when they're walking through the city, there's a one scene where you can see the logo for their fiscal contribution to the film. Oh, another set of conjoined twins, the vacuum.
Oh, yeah.
There's a two-part vacuum that dances around Kirby, and it's got like the motor piece and the suction piece. And
I have such a peeve about two-part vacuums. They're the worst. I do not like it when the canister, like if you have like a removable canister, like sharks have removable canisters, and that's great, but like I mean, like
when you have to lug around the two parts and one isn't lighter than the other, it just means now you have to use two hands all the time.
Yeah. And you're like vacuuming and then like you get a little bit further and you're like, oh, I have to pull this, and then you pull it and then it like bumps you in the back of the feet. And it's the worst design. Yeah. The worst
just
design.
Give me a solidly attaching detachable hose. Uh-huh. That's all I need. Right. I don't want one that falls out of it all the time. I just want a hose that I can unclick, use for the stuff that's far away and stick it back in, click in place,
right,
and just let me vacuum.
Right. Yeah. And so sometimes better or newer is not always better.
Yeah. So. And that fact that we have to settle on that on the vacuum is not that I want to be calling around a Kirby either.
Oh yeah, Kirby's got their own issues. Shark is probably the best that vacuums will ever get, in my opinion.
I used to use the in-house one at that lady's house we used to clean. The one that was in the walls. That didn't suck too bad.
Yeah.
But then you have to like go downstairs to empty it if it gets all full.
I had to do that on another house, and it was just like, I don't know. Like,
did you feel like it was inconvenient?
I felt like it was inconvenient because it was a hose that was like, I don't know, maybe like 60 feet long. It was like long enough to go over one tree branch and go all the way down another.
Then you could suck it up in on itself. Yeah. And you could have saved that blanket, but what did you do?
Yeah.
You let that blanket get yeeted out the window by all of these appliances.
I yelled at the blanket, it stuck up in the tree, that it could just like fall down.
You'll be fine. You're made out of fabric.
Yeah, I'll catch you. I promise.
Yeah.
I'll catch the delicate part. So this kind of going back to my whole religious analogy.
Yeah, do it.
This is one of those moments where they're like, newer is not always better. And Christianity in the 80s was weird.
As someone who loves Jesus, let me tell you, Christianity has always been weird.
Yeah. But like in the 80s, you have like a lot of like, they're just digging their heels. I mean, they're pretty well digging their heels in a lot of ways now, but it's still like, it was kind of the start of it was in the 80s.
What do you mean digging their heels?
Well, like, okay, so you have this whole, like, the 80s was huge on commercialism, and it was very like, you know, plastic was in and nothing was better than plastic. And this whole like,
the fact that when I say Lisa Frank, an entire visual comes to mind, says exactly, oh, 90s, 80s, late 80s, 90s. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they kind of like melded together in that sort of era. But like a lot of the people who were like born in the 40s, they're coming into their like, what, 40 years old in the 1980s. And so if you get any Christians who are like that, they have a tendency to just be like, maybe something happens in your 40s. Maybe something happened in with people who are in their 40s. You know, turning into like going into the 1980s. Maybe I'm just complaining for the sake of complaining because this is a nitpicky podcast.
I'm a huge fan of the phrase, okay, boomer.
But it seems to me like there's this whole, like, you know, back in the good old days, appliances, they were sturdier.
I was talking to my boss about this a while ago. There's this bias, and I forget the exact, if I prepared better notes, maybe, but mm-hmm. I like the spontaneity. There is this bias that we ourselves assume we are smarter than people behind us.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we want to admit it or not, we think we're smarter than our parents. And our parents think that they're smarter than their parents. And on, so that then we also think of entire generations behind us as dumber. The problem is that people are about as smart as they've always been. It's just that we can build on the technologies that somebody else discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, like, we've got a lot of people about to retire who were at their height in the 80s, right? They were accomplished business people who were just starting their families, and they felt this huge success. And now we're coming towards the latter part of their life, and they're terrified of death because they lived their biggest life in a time that was just like, eventually you're going to be thrown away too. And mm-hmm. they think that's what's happening now. And we don't have that. And so we're like, no, this is just life being life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But we feel special about it. But here's what's going to happen in 20 years. We're going to realize whatever our okay boomer thing is. And we're going to be like, and we just have to be open to that. Yeah. But this is the generation before our parents making a judgment of.
So this actually had nothing to do with Christianity. I'm just dogging on a religion that I'm a part of. It's really just about generational changes.
No, well, it's about viewing what you take into your life and how you view things as durable or compostable.
So we were talking about how the world is very much connected right now. We are, and back in the past, like even 100 years ago, we kind of had our own separate, you know, like tribes. We were always like separate. Like, we weren't as connected 100 years ago as we are now.
Yeah, I'm responsible for a neighbor further away than I ever have been before.
Right. And I mean, you may have known about that neighbor, but your responsibility for making sure that they are taken care of is, it's becoming more and more morally acceptable to be like, I should be concerned about someone who I will never probably meet. I don't know necessarily their name, but it should be my moral obligation to make sure that they have things in place to where they can go ahead and get taken care of. Mm. Because that's just the right thing to do.
Yeah.
That's becoming more of the moral norm.
Mm.
So we are no longer separated. We're actually very connected.
I'm with you.
Please yes and me, because I have no way that
I'm going to yes and you right now so hard, because I'm going to take us back to part two of this episode. Or part seven. I don't know how long we've been talking.
Look, 100 days.
Oh, that's nice. Time is not very good in this. I didn't write down how long it took, but this is weird. It's like 3 days, but it's, I don't know. Earlier when I was talking to you about how the toaster recognizes their need for community with blanket, but it's not until after she gets separated from her ultimate dream of being with the master, right? So if you want to draw really wiggly lines around all of this, we need to, from our bit of community, think about the people outside of our community in this ethical way that essentially eventually provides for everyone. If we're going big, then we need to go big with love. And if we're going small, we need to be thoughtful in that love too.
I just don't know how that has to deal with these newer appliances treating these older appliances like they're essentially worthless.
Respect your elders.
Yeah. That's kind of what the movie is saying. That was my original point.
There's also the tribal aspect of, like, you think that we're getting away from tribes, but we're getting more and more tribal.
It's just that you get to pick now.
Yeah.
And this movie is very much about picking your tribe.
And if there's like one distinction that I can pull out from this group of machines and electronics from the B movie.
A B movie?
It's a B movie. One is that they got offered a replacement bulb from the other tribe of parts and pieces, kind of like
an objectively broken people.
They're objectively broken and they're allowing more people into their tribe, whereas this newer group of tribe wants to push as many of those out. And in fact, even
that's TV, a good observation, John. I'm actually pretty, that's wow.
Like, even the TV itself, even though he's been a part of their group, they're willing at any point to get the TV out of there too.
Yeah, he's other.
Yeah.
We can continue. At this point, one of my favorite modern words is yeet, Y-E-E-T. When you yeet something, it just means chuck it. So we cut to Rob at the cabin, and he's like, hey, where's the toaster? And they cut to the outside the building.
This is one of the funnest scenes.
It's so funny, because where's the toaster? And then yeet. And then
where's the vacuum?
Yeet. Where's the radio and the lamp?
Yeet, yeet. Yeah.
It's so hilarious. I love that part so much.
That was one of the greatest.
Okay, and the unreasonable thing that happens now is that the dumpster that they've been yeeted into,
the TV sees that the dumpster comes and picks them up.
Well, the dump truck. But yes.
Dump truck, yeah.
It's got a big logo on the side. It's just very convenient, because what else is the TV going to do? Like, is he going to get them all out with a super long cord that goes 20 feet to the ground and then he can just eat it all the way?
That's only available for the vacuum.
The vacuum can throw his cord up in there and then he just sucks up his cord. Okay, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They are now being taken to Ernie's disposal.
Normally you watch the TV, but in this instance, the TV watched you.
Yes. I love the TV. Yeah. He's so funny.
Yeah. And
we should say that the TV is a wooden box TV with an antenna on it. Oh. And there's a man inside, and that's what talks to them. He's like a news guy. He's got like a tweed suit on, and he's got a bald head with the Picard type hair around the side, all bushy and brown though, and a mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all, you need to know what that is.
They call him Rabbit Ears at one point. That's like his nickname.
They all have nicknames.
Yeah. And then, but the master back at the cabin fixes the AC unit.
Who then is warmed.
Yes.
Alarmingly warmed, the air conditioner. He's like, I guess the master is a good guy, because he'd been ranting so hard the other way.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's the thing. The master comes and fixes the air conditioner, cleans up after their, like, how we're going to get out of here montage, right? Mm-hmm. And then he, like, shuts the door and he turns and he looks back at the cabin and then he just walks away. So effectively, air conditioner is the only one getting abandoned.
Technically, Kirby brought this up at the very beginning that they're going to be selling it, which means that they'll have a new master.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah, so.
But the master's leaving him behind and no one else. And it's because he could never play with his knobs.
Could have avoided this whole adventure if he just stayed there for a little while longer, because he was
like,
coming back.
Literally, yeah. If they had waited a couple days. What they don't understand as appliances is that people take their with them.
Mm-hmm. But if they did that, then there wouldn't have been a movie.
And they never would have gotten to Mars.
I have never seen these other ones, by the way. I compulsively watched this as a child, sitting on a shag carpet in front of a giant TV, like eating bowls of tamale pie. I don't think I ever saw any of the sequels. They were probably straight to video.
You can probably get them on the D Plus.
Yeah, they're on Disney Plus.
They were released as a set with a DVD when it came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
Now we're at the dump. And
yeah, so they get to the dump. Rob comes back home. And at one point, he's like, no, they weren't there. And he tells his mom, who is like, you know, disembodied voice, that, you know, he couldn't find the lamp. And so she was like, oh, just take the lamp over there. And he's like, what are you going to read by? And she, being the mother, is like, oh, I'll just go ahead and read by candlelight, or I won't read at all, or I'll go out. And I'm like, you know, there are other lamps.
Yeah.
And that's when the TV starts like coming up and, you know, doing all these like fake ads for Ernie's disposal.
Ernie's cheap appliance, something, something.
And this TV is going hard.
Yes. One of the funny goofs is that at one point he's like, we got deals, deals, deals. And he goes over to a cabinet and pulls out all these pictures and like throws them up in the air dramatically. And one of them has like a nearly naked lady on it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many 90s kids paused that to check it out. It's not intense.
Yeah.
But it is funny.
And we have, this is kind of like leading into the musical, the very famous musical number from this one.
Is this the most famous number?
I think this is the one that everybody always talks about. This is Worthless. And like
the song is called Worthless.
Fever Dream.
It really is. Like, I thought it was such a simple movie. And now that we've talked about it, like, what? Okay, so would you like to know what I titled this song? Okay, so while the TV is trying to convince Rob to go to this, essentially to go to a dump, pretending that it's an appliance warehouse, I've named this song. Well, I've defined the song for myself, and would you like to know how I've defined it?
Please.
Worthless is my suicide is painless, as performed by Meatloaf.
That's perfect.
I know!
So is that actually a song by Meatloaf?
No.
Okay.
But it's probably why I like Meatloaf. Oh my goodness.
Sorry. It's got, yeah, it's, I mean, it's like a cross almost between a meatloaf and, well, there's some Elvis-y kind of feel to a
well,
couple
of the
riffs.
Only because there's some people, they like, it's a bunch of cars being picked up by a magnet and dropped on a conveyor belt that goes into a crusher. And they are singing about how now they're worthless, but they used to be something. And this is a theme we're seeing through all of this thing, this movie, that these items that were once treasured are now being disposed of. And what in America is the most luxurious disposable item to us?
Cars.
It's going to be cars.
Yeah.
Mobile phones.
Now it's mobile phones.
Now it's mobile phones.
Yeah.
Well, they figured out that by working in, like, what is that? What do they call it when it breaks down on it at a specific timeline? So you have to get a new one. Your warranty ends, your phone mm-hmm. dies, and now you have to get a new phone.
Yeah.
It's like, it's called something specific.
I know what you mean, but I can't think of it either. It's like planned obsolescence or something like that.
Yeah. But cars weren't like that initially. Now they're getting a bit like that too. But these cars had these glorious lives, and they're talking about how what they I once drove the Indy 500, you know?
Yeah.
And now it has like only one wheel left, and like it's getting dropped on the conveyor belt. And he's like, I wonder how good I looked or whatever. And
there was one that had horns on it that said, I drove a Texan to a wedding. I drove a Texan to a wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got all these voices. One of them is Native American.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about driving around on the reservation. And then
yeah.
There's one. Okay. So this, we've had symbolism of suicide previous in this film. There was umbrage taken with one of the cars who drives into the crusher.
Forget it. I'm out.
Yeet. Is that appropriate, guys?
Goodness. What is this movie? What did we just watch? And while these cars are like getting put on the conveyor belt of death by this magnet with...
It's a sentient magnet. It is, we have to eyes. Tell you. Yeah.
It's got eyes.
It doesn't have a mouth. I don't know why that's...
It doesn't need a mouth.
It's got magnets.
Yeah.
You've got magnets.
Yeah. And as it's going through, that's when we see the TV, you know, saying, trying to promote Ernie's disposal to Rob.
Right. And eventually he's about to leave the door. We haven't mentioned his girlfriend at all. We can talk right. about her at the end. She's like an inconsequential character, but she's a delight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind that yeah. she's just this kind of tack on.
She's, I mean, if you removed her from the plot, you could very easily replace like him getting there with just being able to drive his own car. But she still has character. She still has personality.
She does. She's a delight and she's not much of a stereotype.
Right.
Even I think. I mean, visually, she might look like a bit of a stereotype for the time with like the
the tomboyish,
the sharp haircut and like the low cut with the jacket and the hat and like just always be like, but she's independent and, you know,
What I like about this movie is that it does do side characters very well.
Yes.
Yeah. And like if you're going to have side characters in your movie, you could flesh them out somewhat. You don't have to like, you know, proclaim from on high, this is their backstory.
Yeah.
But you can like, if you know where they're coming from, you can go ahead like the repair guy. He like drank a smoothie that looked like it might have been a health smoothie. Maybe it wasn't. And then he had mushrooms.
Marshmallows.
But, marshmallows. But I mean like.
We all took the mushrooms.
Not literally, of course, figuratively, as soon as we press play on this thing.
Oh my gosh. So I think the magnet sees them running around and because they're avoiding him, he wants to get them specifically.
No. He grabbed them, put them on the conveyor belt, and they made an escape. And he was like,
it's dying time. Why aren't you dying?
And that's why he's like obsessed with them, is because they escaped his clutches of death.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then like he grabs them, puts them back on the conveyor belt, and they're like,
but they are talking. They're like, I'm gonna go this way. You're gonna go that way. We're scattered. He's not gonna be able to get all of us. We'll be back on the other side.
He's looking at him like, what?
And then they jump off other sides of the belt. And at some point during all of this, Rob's about to leave the house, and it cuts to him being like, have you ever heard of this place? Yeah. Right? Instead of going to like a store.
Goes all out.
He like fully comes in this. Your screen is the TV screen, and Rob's face comes in front of your face, and he's like, have you ever heard of this place?
The TV is selling it, though. Yeah. He is doing everything he can.
He's passed out. He was like, Ernie's disposal, amazing warehouse, extravaganza of appliances, dirt cheap or whatever. And then he's like, And he's pulling the words into the screen physically. And then he just falls over. And that's when he says, have you ever heard of this place? So then they drive up. And then we cut back to them escaping the conveyor belt and everything. And then Rob and chick whose name I don't know.
Chris.
Roll up. And they're like, does this look like an amazing bargain warehouse appliance experience to you? And then they go in anyway.
Yeah.
It's obviously a dump. There's no storefront. We don't see a guy with a gun and a weird dog being like, get off my property. These are all my cars. I'm going to crash. So they start looking around. They're like, oh, look at this pile of garbage. I could just look. And they act like they're at Macy's.
There are actual like strict regulations and signs at the dump that say no scavenging.
It's true.
Well, here's just one more layer that we can add to the weird is Rob's looking through some stuff and he steps on a picture of his face.
Because the last time that blanket gets picked up by the magnet. They pull out the picture and they're like, I'm going to miss the master. She has a lisp. It's very distracting. The picture falls and then it lands near Rob, who then steps on it. And he's like, what the fuck?
Here's the thing. He doesn't look that weirded out. I think anybody else in their right mind would actually be weirded out. But this is a guy who like probably has emotional connection to appliances.
I'll agree with that.
Thank you.
So then he's like, Chris. Ah!
Yeah. And like they're...
Oh, and then he starts finding stuff on the conveyor belt.
Yeah. So the magnet like is just done trying to like find all of the appliances, the group. So he just grabs up all of this metal and just throws all of it onto the conveyor belt.
He like turns on his superpower. Like normally he'd just been picking up what would fit on his bottom belly. But he scrunches his eyes and he like does this power sphincter like move. He's like... And then all of this metal, including all of our items, get sucked up onto him. He rolls it all down the conveyor belt. The conveyor belt is very full now, right? Mm-hmm. And now he's hovering over it so that if they try to move, he can get them again. And that's when Rob walks up to the conveyor belt.
And he's like, oh, this blanket looks like my old blanket.
And then rubs it on his face.
He picks it up from a conveyor belt.
The dump. And it's been rolling around the wilderness for 3 days.
There's probably
a literal dumpster. At one point, the blanket even goes, I'm covered in burrs and freaking needles. Yes, into
cuddled
the water.
With rodents. What do you think that they peed in that thing? I know animals.
This is not okay, Rob. You need standards. Don't put that dumpster blanket on your face.
And then he picks up the lamp.
He's like, this looks like my lamp. And my radio.
And my toaster.
And a toaster.
And his vacuum cleaner. And he's holding all of these old appliances.
Hey, Chris, these are all mine.
Yeah. And then the magnet's just like.
Yeah.
He must die.
Well, what happens is it pans. Okay. We cut to the face of it as it looms towards Rob. And the freakiest thing is its eyes close and it becomes this unsentient magnet of doom, and it sucks up Rob, and we say suck, but we mean attracts, and then drops him and all the junk because he doesn't think to let go of the vacuum. He's like, what?
He gets the vacuum, and he's just sort of like, that's my vacuum,
and he doesn't know they're alive either, guys. Just like the fat guy Elmo, he doesn't know, but he's like, I'm not letting go of this stuff, and then subsequently gets his life put in danger. For his vacuum.
This is such an 80s movie because it talks about the emotional connection to stuff.
Accurate. Okay, so he's trapped under debris on the conveyor belt.
Right.
What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Blankets wrapped around his leg like, I'm not leaving the mast out.
Yeah.
Or
and
whatever.
Toaster's the only one who's doing anything. And she like goes up onto like this tower of cars, sees the gears for the crushy thing. Mm-hmm. And like it's getting closer. And the master is like, he's got his arm out. And he's like
stuck under a piece of pipe. So he can't move it.
And the most he could do is make a fist so it doesn't grab his fingers.
And the thing that's crushing everything's like this big solid block. So it's going wham, 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 like a super quick, whatever they call the blocks in Super Mario Brothers. And so it's
thwomp.
A thwomp. Thank you. Yeah. God bless it.
Yeah.
Okay. So this thwomp is coming down. And here's the correlation. The toaster loses it at the waterfall, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Freaks out, missteps, drops the cord. She was like, how do I save my friends right now? And decided to like jump in the gears.
Yeah. Sacrifices herself. to save her master.
Yeah, that's where my notes say it's more of a sacrificial toaster.
Martyrdom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like she died for her faith.
Does martyr mean somebody else has to kill you though?
Yeah.
So she's more.
She sacrifices herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I guess yeah, martyrdom. She does. And it's not necessarily for her faith. It's literally to save a human life. Anyways, like I said, the religious metaphor falls apart.
No, that's okay. But like, oh, how about this? The toaster saved God.
Mm.
The faith to save God.
I'm telling you, Rob is Jesus. He brings the AC unit back to life. The AC unit is Lazarus. Just saying.
Okay, so then we've saved the day. Chris doesn't give a crap that Rob's been stuck up there. She's like, get down there, scare me half to death.
At one point, she like actually pulls the girl, like we're watching her.
She's really like, hard to find.
And she just grabs it, and you say.
You can't just pull the grill off of a car.
And then she pulls the grill off of the car.
She just lands ass over tea kettle. She just pulls this thing off the car.
That was very entertaining.
Yeah. It's fantastic. I guess you can. Didn't know it did that. Okay.
Yeah. And so he goes home and he's got all of his stuff and he...
I don't understand why you just don't go get a new toaster.
He's like, you can't find a toaster like this and it's
banged
up.
I going to find a toaster like this?
Yeah, it's banged up and it's got like wires.
Yeah, the filaments are like curling out of it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And so he puts it back together and toaster is fixed.
So then they all get loaded up into the car because... Rob is going off to college. Now he's got a vacuum, a lamp, a toaster, a blanket, and the fifth one I forget.
The radio?
Yeah, the radio.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so he drives off.
He leaves
off.
The trunk open.
Yeah.
Drives away with them all in there.
Well, we have to get one final shot of all of them in the trunk being happy together.
Here's the thing, Lids. They're in a cuddle puddle. What happened in the thicket? What could they not do?
They couldn't cuddle.
There was no cuddle puddle in that thicket there.
Character development?
I mean, they're at least emotionally closer.
Yeah.
And they've all gotten their goal of being with the master.
Yeah.
And they drive off. Oh, but then at the end, we think it's Sean Lovett says, or maybe it's the lamp says.
Yeah.
The last line of the movie is, do you remember what it was?
No.
Because it's only like 18 hours ago.
Fever dream.
They're all in the trunk of the car, the boot, if you will. And they're headed off to college. And somebody says some final line that was not worth remembering. It's just a we've gotten our goal, we're all together, lottie freaking do, right? And then the camera pans away from the car and you see it driving down one of these roads into the country out towards the college, wherever that is. And somebody's laughing so hard at the end of it and they go, oh, I ache with joy. And you can barely hear it, but I'd read about it. So I was like listening for it. I ache with joy.
PSA, if you have that much junk in the back of your car, you should put a little red tag on it. They didn't do any safety checks.
They didn't, if you don't tie down, you're going to get a ticket.
Yeah.
Put a bungee cord on it. Freak's sake.
So the TV got left behind. The TV, who was already kind of ostracized by the new appliance. So what happened to the TV? Did that get yeeted to Ernie's disposal as well?
Well, they did spend time in the apartment. So he knew that they were okay, which is a nice look coming together. I don't know. Those other evil appliances, they should have done something. We didn't need closure with them. They were just an affectation to the consumption in the 80s.
Another aspect of antagonists.
There's no focused antagonists.
They're non-focused antagonists.
We only come to these various challenges, but we never have one.
Yeah. So I think that's the end of the movie.
Yes.
Like I keep saying, this has been a weird experience of a movie as an adult.
Yeah. And sharing it with you now, I don't know. Like viewing it through my eyes as a kid, I feel very much different now that I watch as an adult. I'm like, what is this?
The movie that I always watched all the time when I was a kid was Milo and Otis.
Oh.
I don't think... If we ever do that, that's going to be an interesting movie because like a lot of animals died in it.
Oh, no.
And like there was a moment which I do not remember as a kid, but I know actually happened because I saw a shot from the movie where a cat literally thrown off a cliff. Yeah, that's a messed up movie that I do not want to necessarily revisit as an adult. So,
okay.
Pretty gross live kitty birth in there.
That's immediately what I thought of. I was like, oh, and they have babies.
They have the babies.
Sticky babies.
I remember seeing that as a kid and being like, I'm a kid. I'm not, I don't know if I'm allowed to watch this.
Well, that's because like birth and anything that has to do with it is like taboo.
But I think we're at the end of this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And good, because we don't have to watch it again for a very long time.
Ever again, if we choose not to.
No, well, what we're going to do is we're going to hit 50, 60 years old, and we're going to start feeling entitled and that the younger generation is dumb. Then we'll watch this and be like, oh.
So many thoughts. Anyways, so Naomi, what would you say your most shocked moment? That is for anyone who is tuning in the first time. We go through and we say the things that shocked us about this movie, things that sometimes we would like to change.
It's pretty shallow, but I think that in terms of like, there's no use talking in depth about it. It's just that the self-harm stuff is not okay. And I could have done without the entire forest scene with the animals.
Yeah.
Now that I recognize they spit in each other's mouths. So gross. Oh, gosh. Okay, sorry. Yeah. That one particularly grossed me out. But, like, this is the outright hatred of self that happens throughout this film. I think that really spoke to me as a kid. And it kind of sung out to me this time, too. It's just, like, yeah, it's a little over the top.
Yeah. I guess for myself, it's just there's a lot of little contrivances that I'm just like, as a storyteller, maybe it's just an aspect of the road trip type movie. And I'm not really a huge fan of that.
Mm.
But it just seems like it's going from one place to another to meet their ultimate goal at the very end. And there's just sometimes little contrivances that sneak up.
Well, isn't that convenient kind of things?
Yeah, like the whole thing, like, oh, they start short circuiting at the waterfall, or like there's this scene where they cross the road, and that's when we see this later on where Rob and Chris are driving to the cabin. And it's just a lot of those little things that are just sort of like, you know, I don't know, like we already know that they're leaving and that the master isn't going to be there, or we see that later on that the master is going to be going to the cabin.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that little things like that just weren't necessarily needed.
I agree with that about other things, but I think it was necessary for the master to go back to the cabin to try to retrieve the items to establish that he had attachment to them too.
That being said, there were like a lot of little things that I did like about the movie that were like Chris pulling off the grill of the car.
Yes.
Like that was pretty great.
Yes.
There was also like I noticed that Rob kept like pushing up his glasses from the middle.
And I'm
like,
got to tell you, older Rob was little Naomi's.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I have a type.
And the scene where the objects are getting tossed out as the master is just like, or as they're getting yeeted out. Yeah.
The play, the back and forth, the where is it? The where is it? It's actually pretty unexpected. Like, this will be my good thing. I love how varied the types of humor are throughout the entire film. So at one point, like, they do have the slapstick animals. Okay, and that's not my thing, but maybe that was the funnest thing for a kid to see when they watched that movie. But, like, the freaking clown saying run? I mean, that's a kind of funny that is like, what? And, like, way modern compared to, like, then.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the timing on the yeet thing. Like, the comedy. They just delivered it the entire film. And I mean, we couldn't unless we wrote down all the jokes and like the repartee between the lamp and the radio. Like you can't put that stuff in a bottle. It's got to be a genuine affection of people like working together. The audio and the visual were both so thoughtfully done and still funny because so often one of those gets emphasized and the rest falls away. And I think this movie, despite it being like a fever pitch of what is going on right now, it's still a cohesive movie. You might still recommend this movie to somebody. I mean, we haven't gotten to that part, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just feel like it left me feeling all over the place in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But in other ways, you know, that like little things here and there, they kind of like, in some ways it worked, in other ways it didn't.
Oh.
That was my shock. Some things just did not work for me. Other things definitely did. And it was kind of like, imagine a dish. Imagine like a two-course dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And one dish, it has like, you know, you got your protein. That's really good. But the vegetables are not that good.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second dish, it's kind of like it flopped.
So it's the vegetables were good, but the protein sucked?
Yeah. So it's like there were certain elements. Like I don't know.
It sounds like this movie was like a bowl full of Skittles mixed with M&Ms to you.
Yes.
If you take each individual component, it might be fine. But if you grab a handful of that, you're going to be like, what?
This is chocolatey and fruity, and I don't know how I feel about it.
I do know how I feel about it. Gross.
Yeah. It's like eating Cheez-Its and Lay's sour cream chips.
That sounds crackers. Delicious, but I wouldn't eat Cheez-Its with Nutella.
Yeah. Some people would probably eat cheese with, I don't know.
Oh, no. Chocolate is good with cheese. I just don't know if Nutella's not actually.
Oh, yeah. But cheese and sour cream and onion chips. Cheez-Its and sour cream and onion chips.
That sounds delicious.
Really?
Yeah. I like cheesy chips, though.
I think your M&Ms and Skittle metaphor is probably better. That's how I feel. It's like a bowl of M&Ms and Skittles.
This roommate of mine and I used to play the grossest combination food game. And for the longest time, the reigning champion. So we would just, we would think of two foods that would do not go together. And then we would message each other about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reigning champ for the longest time was strawberries and mustard. Not like a honey mustard vinaigrette. That's delicious with strawberries. Right. But like straight up yellow mustard dipped Nutella style around a strawberry. And then you have to eat that.
Oh, yeah. This movie is like strawberries dipped in deli styled mustard.
Mm.
Or does that sound good? Well, is it the deli?
I've totally made a vinaigrette like that.
You know, what's interesting to me is this doesn't seem like it needs to be titled anything about the toaster at all.
Yes, like, it's so very little about the toaster at all, except that
it almost makes more sense to have like Toy Story itself could be called the Brave Toy Cowboy or whatever, you know, or just Woody the Cowboy and Friends or something like that. But and I would accept that. I would accept that about Toy Story. Even though there's an ensemble there, there's some leads really in there. And for some reason, this seems more like a definitive ensemble and not really a...
It doesn't need to, the,
doesn't
it doesn't
need
have
to be
a
about the toaster.
Yeah.
Toaster story. Appliance story.
Toast story, like Toy Story. Toast story. Except there's only like three pieces of toast the entire film. How Blanky got her boy back. What are you gonna do, suck me to death? Applauders, I don't know how much editing that last part is gonna take, but I assume quite a bit. So praise Jen for the cohesiveness of the conclusion of this podcast, but we want to thank you for coming with us on this journey.
It was a journey through a fever dream for me anyways.
It really was a revisiting of where a lot of my anxieties began. We will all be alone. Unless you can get rescued from a conveyor belt by a toaster. And then we'll all go to college together.
And then to Mars.
Oh my God, we're going to have to watch the next one.
No, we don't have to do anything.
Okay, you already picked out our next movie.
Did I pick out the next movie?
Thought you did. Applauders, if you have seen this film, then you know what we're talking about. And if you haven't, there's no way to explain it to you. And that's just the experience of life. And the brave little toaster would encourage you to go out and experience life. Live your best life, Applauders.
Yes. Sorry, this, like I said,
no, it's okay.
This movie left me in a state.
It melts your brain, and then you try to analyze. We're just plucking leaves out of the air in the middle of autumn, and it's just, and maybe we should just leave it alone at this point, you know?
I think that's a great way to end the podcast.
Until then, stay toasty.
Oh, man, it's bad. Applauders, we'll catch you on the next time.
Yeah. All right.
Part 3 of our review of The Brave Little Toaster is finished, Applauder. But we've only just begun in Season 3 of our never-ending quest to bring you the most in-depth reviews for film and television's finest forgotten forerunners. Hey, this is your audio engineer and voice from your app, not your appliance, Jen, congratulating you on completing yet another one of our reviews that somehow ended up longer than the thing itself. It happens. Ready to deep dive into the waterfalls of discussion, or just want to toss some factoids our way? Why not tag or message us on Facebook using @ShockedAndApplaud or Twitter using @ShockedApplaud? We may even mention your comments in a future episode. Until then, we'll be back with more banter in 2 weeks for March's review. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
And we're done! Yay!